Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
We'll see if Mary Kay Cabot of Cleveland.com and Plain Dealer agrees. Join us on the fan hotline. Mary Kay, another caller joining us from across the pond. How are you, Mary?
I'm doing great. How you doing? I'm just about to get on the bus to go to Browns practice.
Any tea and crumpets yet? Any fish and chips?
I definitely have had some chips. Two servings of chips yesterday.
Love it.
No fish yet. And probably some crumpets at some point soon.
Love it.
All right, and when you go to practice, are you going to shove a microphone or a camera in Shedeur Sanders' face? Mary Kay, I'm watching ESPN we had on in studio. We peruse all the different networks and the local affiliates in the morning, and they had a 10-minute segment on Shedeur Sanders and what he was doing yesterday in the locker room. It was on Scott Van Pelt last night. I've seen it everywhere, Mary Kay. Is this gone too far officially?
You know what? I think that I really actually think that Shedeur, in his own way, was trying not to steal the show for Dylan Gabriel yesterday. I think by him not saying anything, he was trying not to create the next headline. He knows that he's a content machine. He knows exactly the power of his words, and I think he was trying not to do that. And it didn't work out that way, but I don't think he had any ill intent. I don't think he was trying to say, hey, look at me. This is all about me today.
I just think it's time for the Browns to tell him, hey, listen, media's coming in. Go find somewhere to hang out for 45 minutes and then you can come in. Players hide on us all the time.
Go to the Johnny Manziel closet.
Yeah, right. You know, I mean, how often is Miles ever in the locker room until Fridays when he talks? You never see Miles in the locker room when media is there. He's not the only one. Go
but
find.
You have to understand something about Shedeur. He grew up in the spotlight. He grew up in the fishbowl. They have live streamed their whole entire lives.
Yeah.
They want everything out there. In fact, you may have seen that Dion commented on this on Instagram, and he gave it 10 laughing emojis. So this is a family that's used to being in the media, in the spotlight. And, of course, from a journalistic sports writer standpoint, I don't want him hiding. And if I were the Browns, you know, they're not supposed to tell their players to go hide somewhere. So I wouldn't do that. I think that we need all the players available all the time. That's what they're supposed to be. So I'm a big advocate of access. So I wouldn't tell him to go hide. And it's up to him what he wants to say. So I do think it's relevant. I do think it's a story how Shedeur Sanders feels about this, because there was a chance that perhaps you would make him the backup quarterback. So I think it is a question, and I think it is a fair one. And I, you know, he could have just said, hey, I'm just putting my head down, working hard, happy for Dylan, and off we all go.
Can we agree this is why 31 teams passed on him at least 5 times? Because they don't want this nonsense and mess in their locker room over
nonsense.
The third string quarterback.
You know what? That may have been part of it for some teams. I think the other part of it for some teams was the fact that, you know, things that we have even heard Andrew Berry say now is the fact that he went from a sort of, you know, English class to Mandarin in terms of what he was going to have to learn as far as calling the play in the huddle, sliding the protections, and doing all of those things that you had to do pre-snap. He didn't show up in the NFL as ready to do those things as some other people, including Dylan Gabriel, and I think that had a lot to do with it.
Mary Kay Cabot, Plain Dealer at Cleveland.com on the fan hotline. So, Mary Kay, the decision to go with Dylan Gabriel, is this anywhere near the timing that some in the building might have expected? And how confident is this team and the decision makers truly in his ability to go out there and not just perform, but win a football game?
You know, I don't think that I don't think they wanted to do it this early at all. I think that they had hoped that Joe could hold down the fort for half the season or longer and kind of see how everything goes. So they really needed him to, you know, to just play clean football, and he wasn't able to do that. And not all of it was his fault, of course. We know that. But he just wasn't able to stop turning the ball over, and the offense wasn't functioning well with him. And the receivers weren't flourishing with him in the football game. So sometimes you just have to make a change and see if everything comes together.
So what do you expect out of Dylan Sunday? Lyman thinks he's going to be an absolute disaster, and I think he's going to be competent.
Well, the thing about Dylan is the fact that he is he's a poised player. He has a lot of confidence. He has played, he has started 63 games. I know Brian Flores is going to try to make his job extremely difficult, but he is, you know, he's a very, again, experienced player. Hard to say that when somebody's a rookie, but I think that they will find enough things for him to do well that I think he will operate pretty efficiently. So that's the plan. And the thing that he has to not do is turn the ball over. So we'll see what Brian Flores' defense has in store for him. They're going to try to exploit his height. They're going to try to exploit the tackle situation. I think it's going to be a shorter, zippier, snappier offense that you're going to see. I think you'll see some RPOs and some movement, some bootleg, more bootlegs, rollouts, anything that has to do with some quarterback movement. Get that pocket moving and get things a little bit less predictable than they were.
Obviously, you want to make life easier on a rookie with steady offensive line play. Who is going to be playing right tackle, which is going to be pretty important this week, considering the lefty, and who's going to be playing left tackle?
Well, we're heading over to practice now, so I'll have a better idea on that later today, although we don't get to watch very much practice. But hopefully for Dylan Gabriel that Jack Conklin will be back, because you really would want Jack to be protecting your blind side over there as the right tackle. So hopefully for Dylan that will happen. Don't know, can't say for sure yet, but that would be advantageous for him. And then is Cam Robinson ready to start over there at left tackle? I would go ahead and throw him in there as long as he's up to speed enough, and he should be by Sunday. He's started a game already this season. He's played in several games this season, so he's in football shape. And I think the alternative might possibly be worse, so I would go ahead and do that.
Jack Conklin would be huge, huge, huge upgrade, obviously, if he's able to come back. Do you think, I just thought of this, do you think there's any chance that they know in the back of their mind, hey, Jack's probably going to be good, that's why we can make this move, rather than the tackle situation that they've had the last couple of weeks with a rookie? Or am I reading way too much into it on a Wednesday, Thursday?
You know what, I think that they were hopeful that that could happen, but I don't think that that was a huge factor. I think the number one factor in all of this was the fact that they just could not protect the football, and that you're never going to win games when you're turning it over three times a game. And when you're getting blown out the way that they did in Detroit, that was an embarrassing, embarrassing loss for this organization. They're not going to stand for that. They've got good players on this team. Your championship caliber defense isn't going to stand for that very long. So I think, you know, that could be a nice bonus for them to get Jack Conklin back, but not a reason why they did it.
You're in that locker room way more than just about anybody else. Did you get a feel at all about how the veterans on that team, and I know Joe Flacco being 40 adds to this, but they're the oldest team in the NFL by age this season. At least I've seen somewhere around those numbers, depending on the roster each week. How do the veterans feel about going to a rookie, especially a third round draft pick this early? Or were they done with Joe Flacco because the play just wasn't up to par?
Well, first of all, I was not in the locker room yesterday because I arrived in London yesterday morning. We did not know exactly when we needed to be here back when we made all those reservations.
Well, had Flacco lost them, you know, over the last few weeks?
No, I don't think he had lost them, because we had talked to veterans after the game, like Joel Bitonio, who had said, we still believe in him. I think a lot of players looked out there and saw that this offense is not a well-oiled machine yet. And Dylan Gabriel is going to suffer through some of this too, and there will be growing pains. This was an offense that went through a four-way quarterback competition. They don't necessarily have the timing and chemistry down with any one of the quarterbacks that they should. Once again, there are new blocking schemes. It's just different all over again, like, you know, than it was last year. So I think they looked out there and saw that Joe was trying to hold it together, that he was getting hit a lot, that they had tackle problems. I don't think a lot of people were going, oh, my goodness, what is this guy doing out here? I think they could see what he was trying to do and how it just wasn't working for a lot of different reasons. And once again, a lot of those reasons are still going to be there this Sunday. It's just a matter of how Dylan can navigate them.
Is there any sort of advantage for Minnesota that they've been over there for 10 days, or is it a disadvantage that Minnesota has been over there for 10 days?
You know, you never know in these situations. Sometimes it goes the way that you think it's going to go, and sometimes it goes the exact opposite way. You know, will the Browns just get over here? You know, they're just getting here today. They're going to have to be tired today. There's no way that they won't be tired today, even if they slept on the plane. So they're just getting rolling today. And as you mentioned, the Vikings have been here. You know, they had a day off. Some of them went golfing. They, you know, they're enjoying London. And so we'll have to see which one of those teams can bring the juice on Sunday. And you never really know how that's going to work out.
I think Pittsburgh went Friday last week, right, for their game. So is
Aaron Rodgers was not happy about that. He wanted to be there much earlier.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, curious if you have any insight into their thought process of why they chose to go when they did, as opposed to going earlier or later, why they chose. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I'm just wondering their thought process behind their timing.
Well, I was actually surprised because, as we know by now, Kevin Stefanski likes to get this football team out of Berea as often as possible. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time at the Greenbrier, and we've spent time in Philadelphia, and we've spent time in Los Angeles. And so I was a little surprised that he didn't take advantage of the opportunity to corral his football team, his struggling football team, get here a few days early and kind of bring them all in and pull them together. But, you know, they have exercise scientists and they do things different ways. And I'm sure that they had a method to their madness. And I don't know exactly what the reason is yet.
Mary Kay, Bubba Ventrone, a special teams coach, was he put on notice last week? Just listening to over the last week, listening to Stefanski, he obviously couldn't have been happy with the special teams play in three of the four games anyway. But I do wonder if at some point, is his job going to be on the line if they continue to have these gaffes, especially with the defense playing as well as they are?
You know what? I don't think so. I don't think that that Bubba is going to be, that his job is going to be in jeopardy in the middle of the season. I don't see that happening because it's too hard to switch everything up. And you can point to the problems in every one of the situations for the most part. I mean, Grant Delpit took responsibility for just making a mental error and thinking the ball was out of bounds on the punt return for a touchdown. You coach that up pretty well, I'm sure. And I don't know how you can blame that on Bubba. And you can't really blame missed a couple of missed field goals on Bubba, and they've gotten that settled down. But certainly they have to shore up those mistakes, and those special teams have to completely pull together. Sometimes it's a function of the back end of your roster. There's a lot of turnover, and maybe your back end guys aren't performing as well as you need them to. So they've got to get it together there. Those two other phases of the game can't keep leaving the championship defense hanging out to dry.
Are you on the bus from the hotel with the other Browns beat reporters right now?
I was sitting on there for a little bit of this interview and disturbing them, I'm sure, and then I just jumped off for a minute.
Oh, man. Mary Kay, I was going to have you power rank who was the most hungover or who your favorite beat reporters were, but I'll let you off the hook now since they're not going to be there to hear it.
Well, I'll tell you that one of us just got here this morning, and so he's going to be tired today. And then three of us got here yesterday, and we probably got a very good night's sleep last night, I'm guessing.
Oh, what fun is that? Man, you couldn't let me on this. I'd be very persuasive. I would be very bad influence on the rest of the beat. Mary Kay, thank you. Enjoy the trip. We are having fun, and if you need to stick a microphone or a camera in Shador Sanderson, don't listen to Jason Lloyd. Do your job.
All right, you guys, We'll be in touch. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. There she is. Mary Kay Cabot, plaindealer@cleveland.com. Boy, a lot of thoughts on what she just said.
Well, I'm sure that everything I said today is going to infuriate everybody I work with, and I totally get it. And by the way, Mary Kay's right when she's talking about access. The NFL takes advantage all the time of limiting access and trying to make guys not available, whatever. I just think in this instance, we're not talking about the starting quarterback. We're not talking about the backup quarterback. We're talking about the third string quarterback.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Oh, it's day after. I feel like the Poseidon Adventure, you know, the boat flipped and all of a sudden they saw the light come in. Remember that at the end of the movie? That's kind of how it feels like. I'm wondering what's going to look like as we move forward after the boat flipped all the way around and all of a sudden they came from 15 and a half back to be able to push it to a wild card series. And, you know, it was a fun ride. I'm not going to question that it wasn't a fun ride, but you know, you sit here and you kind of look back a little bit and you're like, oh, man, what if? What if they could have taken just one more game against the Tigers? We get a little bit more perspective on it from it. That, and I want to talk to him about the Browns as well. He is a super friend of the show. We welcome him from Florida. You know him and love him as a man that helped the Indians throughout the playoffs and throughout his career here in Cleveland and growing up in Geneva and the pride of Wright State. And, of course, you always know him now as the color analyst for the Tampa Bay Rays. He is Brian Anderson. Son. How are you?
What's up, Brian?
I'm doing well, boys. I can't believe how quickly the season went. And now, you know, first week of the off season, but just settling in, enjoying some football, some playoff baseball. So things are going well for me. I wish they were going a little bit better up back home.
I'm going to start with a generic question. We talked about the ratings for baseball for the first day. ESPN put them out. Said they were up 100 and what percent, Dan?
Over 100% for the under 35 demographic.
All right. So first, let me just ask you, three game series, yay or nay, and where baseball is going from here?
I do like it. I think the one and done for the wild card was it's too happenstance. So I like the idea of the three-game series for the wild card. I think that allows the teams that do earn the bye, it gives them time to set up their rotation and all of those things. And, you know, even for people, and I was one of them at one point, that thought, you know what, baseball is a game that's meant to be played every day. And a lot of times, and we've actually seen that play out. Yeah. Some of these wild card teams get hot, and then they all of a sudden go into a series against a team that had the best record in the league and had the bye and sat around for 4 or 5 days, and they're just not quite ready. They get taken off guard and all of a sudden, you know, they end up losing the series. But I think back to when I was with Arizona in our World Series run in 2001, you know, we beat the Braves in 5 games in the NLCS. So we had almost a full week before we started the World Series against the Yankees. And obviously, you know, running out Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling doesn't hurt, but it didn't seem to hurt our team at all as far as, you know, being able to be sharp once that series did begin. So I do like the three-game wild card. I love the fact that they play it just in one venue, you know, whoever finished higher in the seedings, and that it's three straight days. I mean, I think that that's great. And, you know, and then at that point, then turn them loose into the next, you know, the division series and see what happens. So I do like that. I also find it very interesting, and I laugh about this with our producer all the time, but if you really start to take notice of not just baseball, but any sport, it seems like every game is, this is the highest rated Thursday night football game in the history of the league. Single time. So what are they counting different now that every next game is the highest rated game we've ever seen? I mean, it's literally across sports and across every demographic, it's always the highest rated that we've ever seen here in the last year. So I have no idea if they're counting differently, but it is weird.
If they can count streaming, I mean, let's be honest, that's a little bit different than what we used to have in the past. I mean, they really were guessing at numbers at some points and sure, people in wearing sure meters. But so with streaming, you know exactly how many people are tuned in. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that's why. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I just know that everything now is sets an all-time record for TV viewing. Everything. So good for them. That's great. I watched...
All right, Brian, let's get to the Guardian side of things. I know you had an eye on a good chunk of it. Starting pitching was unbelievable, and it looked really good, and the bullpen was together, and this offense just couldn't muster anything to save its soul. Did you see that watching the game from a little bit from a distance, that it's just this, hey, if they could get this offense fixed, this Guardians team might make some noise?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, and I think that you can say that about any number of teams. You know, and I think Cleveland has become one of those organizations that is special when it comes to developing pitching, or being able to take pitching that has come from outside the organization and refine it just a little bit to get the best out of them, to maximize that particular pitcher's strengths, and allow them to have, you know, consistent success at the big league level. They have become one of those organizations. We know that, you know, the Rays are one. And we know that Cleveland has tried to follow in their footsteps, and they've done a really good job. Those are two of the top in baseball as far as, you know, just continuing to, doesn't matter what the names are, doesn't matter how young, how old, where they've come from, they continue to put out really good pitching staffs year in and year out. So with that being said, you get athletes out in the field that can catch the baseball and play good defense to support that pitching staff. Now comes the offensive side of things. And that's where it gets a little bit tougher, because, you know, it's hard to go out and buy a hitter or two when you're in the position of Cleveland or Tampa Bay or any like-minded franchise or market-sized franchise, because they just can't go out. They're going to get outspent. There are so few impact hitters that become available that you're going to get outbid by one of the big dogs. That's just the way that it's going to be. So that comes back to you as an organization to be able to develop hitting. And that's what you're going to have to do. And that's not real easy either, but definitely it's a team that if you could get just an uptick, it doesn't have to be earth shattering. You don't have to be a top two offense, but you get enough offense, middle of the pack, even with that pitching staff and the ability to catch the baseball. And you're going to be a team that is relevant year in and year out. And in a special year, you make the long run.
I'm going to ask you two perspective questions. One, I thought Stephen Vogt had a really good question after the game yesterday, and it was just someone said, you realize that you'll never have that team again when you walk out of that clubhouse, that group of people will never be the same group of people. Yes, there's guys that stay, right? But you're right, always mixing. So what's that feeling like when you walk out? And then in particular, like in 97.
I think that it's always tough when the season comes to an end, and especially when it comes to an end abruptly, you know, where early in the day, you think this is the day that we move on. And by the end of that day, you're going to bed thinking, oh my gosh, it's all coming to an end. And tomorrow I clean out my lockers. And so it's a weird feeling for a ball player, because you're always optimistic and you're always thinking that there's another game. Unless it's game 7 of the World Series, you know, or you feel like there's going to be a tomorrow. And when there's not a tomorrow, that's tough to take. And you also feel like, yeah, we'll double down. We're going to do it again next year. The same guys, we're going to go out, when that's not going to be the case. I think these guys are well enough, you know, they're well aware enough to understand that it's not going to be the same group. You hope that you're part of that group, but it's just not going to be the same group. And so that's always strange, but that's something that you can slowly digest through the off season. When you talk about that 97 team in particular, that's what I thought. I mean, I was telling somebody the other day, we were talking about, you know, that game 7 down in South Florida, and you know, we're up two to one going into the bottom of the ninth, and we're going to win a World Series. I'm going to get to be a part of that. You know, being a kid from Geneva and growing up a Cleveland fan. And so, you know, it doesn't happen. They tie it up. They obviously win that World Series, and you get on the flight back home. It's hard to describe how quiet a flight can be. You got a 2.5-hour trip from from down there back to Cleveland, and you could hear a pin drop. You just heard the hum of a motor, of a Boeing 757 engine is the only thing you heard all the way back. And then you land and you go, you know what? Next year, we've got the guys, boom, ba boom, ba boom. And that's how I felt. And a month later, I'm being picked with the first pick in the expansion draft for Arizona. And I'm going from a team that came within a half inning of winning a World Series to an expansion team that's going to hope to not lose 100 games. So that was a huge thing for me because I thought, and I had heard, you know, it's funny, you have your feelers out there, and because you were able to protect 15 guys from the first round of that draft. And then once you got a player taken, you could pull three guys back on the protected list, and you couldn't get another player taken until every other team in the league had a player taken from them. And so, you know, there was, you know, that's just how it went. And I had heard, I was actually at a Cavaliers game and had heard from some higher ups within the organization that I was protected, that I was going to be one of the 15 that was protected. I'm like, good. A couple days later, I'm doing some work around my house, and I hear Peter Gammons on the TV say that Tony Saunders, Brian Anderson, and Jeff Suppan are going to be the top three pitchers available when the expansion draft starts. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought I was going to be protected. What does he know that I don't? So I called my agent. He did some thinking, you know, working behind the scenes, whatever, got back to me and said, you know what? I don't think that you're protected, and you might get picked. And so that's the first heads up that I got. That and found out later that yes, I at the last minute I had been taken off the list and somebody else had been put on, and so now I was exposed, and that's exactly how it went. So Arizona wins the coin flip. That's what I don't think that people understand. So there was a coin flip to get who gets the first pick in the draft. Wow. Arizona won the coin flip, so their choice was we get the number one overall pick, or we give that to Tampa Bay and we take picks 2 and 3. And I was talking with our owner, former owner at this point, Stu Sternberg, about that just the other day. And I was telling him the story about how I got taken by Arizona. And he said, well, that's what I would have done. He goes, take 2 and 3. Give them the top. We'll take the next best two. Hmm. That's a better move. So that's what Arizona did. And so Saunders went to Tampa Bay with first pick overall. And then I went the first overall pick to Arizona. And then Jeff Suppan went right after me, which that was another interesting story because, you know, Buck Showalter said, we knew we were taking you and Suppan, but we were only going to have one number one pick. So we had to decide who's it going to be, because that's going to be our first overall pick, even though we're getting both of you. I mean, it's not like it got me anything extra, but they decided to take me with their first pick and then Suppan right after me with their second pick, and that's how it went down. So that was strange for me because you think you're going to run it back, and being a hometown guy and the disappointment of that, you really want to make amends the following year. And like I said, the next day, you know, within a few weeks, I'm headed out to Phoenix and part of an expansion team, and I'm, you know, you're out on the West Coast. All of a sudden, you're a three-hour time change.
So you do realize that there's some kid in Phoenix that looks at you the way that someone here looks at Jim Pine. Right? You're the Jim Pine of Arizona.
That's awesome. I've never wanted to aspire to be anything greater than that.
Oh, congratulations, Brian.
Your plaque's in the mail.
That's all I can think about is you being picked first, and I'm like, Jim Pine, Jim Pine, Jim Pine. Hey, one more point. Okay, so, and Dan's going to put his head through the glass on this. Do you realize how that 97 team, and I'm going to compare it to the team this year.
Please.
That of the regular nine, Alomar, Tomy, Fernandez, Vizquel, Williams, Giles, Grissom, Ramirez, Justice, what do you think the lowest batting average was?
No. It couldn't have been lower than 270.
Oh, yeah.
262.
That checks out.
Marquise Grissom, okay. 262. He would have been hitting fourth all season here.
Yeah.
262.
Okay, here's the difference. Today's game has skewed so much younger. Read the names on that list again.
Yeah.
Alomar, do you want their age on that team too?
Ellis Burks would be a Hall of Famer if he played right now.
Oh, listen, you don't have the veterans like you did on that team. Manny, read those names.
Manny was your youngest everyday player at 25 at that point. Sandy was 31. Tomy was 26. Fernandez was 35. Omar was already 30. Matt Williams was 31. Giles was 26, Grissom was 30, Ramirez was 25, and Dave Justice was 31. Not to mention, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys on the roster that were all over 30. All over, and 5 of those guys over 33.
Yeah, you that's a coaching staff today.
Yes.
That's your coaching staff.
Good point.
Or manager, or all the managers.
Or that too. Or that too. It's just a different era. It's a different era. It's a different game. And it's played out differently with what they're able to do, with these kids, these pitchers and the pitch labs and the velocity training and all of this stuff, which at the end of the day is more than likely going to shorten a lot of guys' careers because they're just, your body's not built for that. We've talked about that before. When you talk about max effort on every pitch and max spin and max break and max velocity and all of those things, you know, I can make a kid stronger. I can work with him and get him stronger. I can make him more flexible. We can, with all the technology advancements, we can make a kid stronger. We can make a kid more flexible. We can make his mechanics, because of all of the real-time technology, we can make his mechanics more efficient. We can do all of these things. We can train for velocity. All of these things we can do. That's all true. You know what we can't do? We can't strengthen ligaments and tendons.
Yeah.
Those are what they are. So when you make a kid stronger, more flexible, more efficient mechanically, train him for velocity. Those are all wonderful things. But those ligaments and tendons are now taking on a load. You don't think they were designed to do that before? They're certainly not able to do it when guys are stronger, faster, more efficient, and all of the above. That's why you don't see any decrease in the number of injuries with pitchers, even though we've got load management. Even now, starters can't go more than 5 innings. Every reliever is only 1 inning guy. All of the things doesn't matter, and it doesn't take away from the injuries, because at the end of the day, all of those prior things can be true. Ligaments and tendons are what they are, and they're going to snap, especially when you put the workload on them that these guys are. That's just bottom line. So when you hear all these theories about why more guys are getting hurt, is it the ball, is it this, that's nonsense. It's what I just told you. It's making guys stronger, more efficient, more flexible, train for velocity, go to the pitch lab, get better breaks, change your arm angle. All of those things are wonderful. A ligament and tendon, they are what they are. They're not designed to take on that load. They're going to pop. That's just the bottom line. And then guess what? It's the dirtiest secret in Major League Baseball. All of the front offices know that. They know that. And they know that these guys are going to pop, and then it's next man up. Get me the next guy that can throw 98.
All right. We could do this all day. So let's just – I'm just going to open this up. The Browns. Go.
Oh, boy. Yeah. What about him?
All right, Dylan Gabriel starting in London. What do you think of making the move? Would you have made the move to Joe Flacco?
Does anybody think this team's going anywhere? You know, you're wasting a really, really good defense. Flacco, Gabriel, whoever else. What does your offense look like? Between offensive line, playmakers. You know, I watched some of these other games and I see – you know, some of these other playmakers at the skill positions. And I'm like, where is that on Cleveland? Where is that? I mean, you've got some guys, but I just don't know if it makes any difference. I mean, I'll tune in because, you know, curiosity to see how the kid does. But it already feels like a lost year. And I hate that. We're 4 games in and it feels like you're just going to play out the string and see what you have for next year. And I can't stand that thought. But that's what it feels like. Should prove me different. Listen, they completely outplayed Cincinnati in game 1. Completely outplayed and yet lose. You know, then you have that the Ravens, their only win is an absolute beatdown of you, and then the Packers miracle, and then Detroit handles you. You know, so I don't know. The one thing that does perplex me, and on one hand it does, and on another part because of who he is, it doesn't. But have you ever seen a third-string quarterback get more airtime than our guy?
No.
I mean, for God's sake.
We just brought that up 2 segments ago. I said the same thing.
Does anybody even know who the third stringer is on any other team? And yet our guy is getting talked about all the time. If that doesn't tell you the state of your team, nothing else does, period. End of discussion. The fact that that guy hogs the airwaves, whether he's up to it or not, the fact that his name is in everybody's mouth tells you that your team isn't where it should be. period. No one should even know he's on the roster.
Hmm. Yeah, okay. My other question here is, how long before you have a defensive mutiny? And we'll bring that up. We'll bring that up next week. We'll bring it up next because I'm running out of time.
The fact that they haven't had one yet, I don't know. I don't know because I've been thinking the same thing. Poor Myles Garrett has to be like, my good God Almighty, I should have just followed through. I mean, just wasting.
And then he gets a check wasting. Every 2 weeks. He goes,
first
ah,
and 15th,
it's okay.
And he's like, ah, it's okay.
But here's the thing, boys. He was going to get that check from whoever.
Well, that's true.
Probably like to get that check and win a freaking game. That'd be cool.
I don't know. He might be getting it on the 30th and 13th now if he gets early deposit. I'm just saying. That's
all right. Next week, defensive mutiny in the Dylan Raiola Drill Fest.
We're talking about that. BA, thanks. We appreciate you.
All right, boys. Take care.
Always a pleasure.
Talk soon, brother.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
As he is every single Wednesday, is Odyssey NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. I kind of went Jack Palance there. Welcome back to the show, buddy. How you doing, Ross?
I'm doing well. I like that. I thought that was pretty good, actually. Nick, you've kind of a nice voice.
People are saying it. Many people are saying it. By the way, Ross, my coworkers. Swears today he's never seen Goonies, and then he Googled Goonies only to find out he has seen it, but still can't really define what the movie's about.
How old is your coworker?
He was born in 1998.
Oh, okay. Wow. Gosh, I'm old.
Dude.
That's understandable because I'm sure there's movies, you know, from like the 60s that I haven't watched, you know, I don't know. I mean, the movies from the 80s, the movies from way before he was even a thing. So I guess I'm a little bit happy and impressed that he even watched it at all.
We'll take a win here. What do you think about Dylan Gabriel being the new starting quarterback for the Browns?
Wow. You know, they don't call you the master of the segue for nothing, yep. Nick. That was incredible.
They literally don't call me that.
I think we all knew it was inevitable. You know, the question was always just one of timing, and certainly we talked about that last week. You know, I don't think going against Brian Flores and the Vikings defense is ideal, but I don't know. I'm not really sure there is an ideal time. You know, I mean, we could talk about, well, then this, but then this on the road at the Steelers, that's probably not ideal. So then maybe at home against Miami would be best. You know, I think one of the biggest reasons why they probably did it now is, you know, what if they put Flacco in or kept Flacco in and they went over there and beat the Vikings? Then it kind of feels like you got to leave him in there for a couple more weeks. And I think that they had kind of gotten to the point where it's like, okay, we're not going to the playoffs. I think most of the players can probably see that that's unlikely. And, you know, Gabriel might give us a spark. Who knows? And let's get him out there. And I think maybe the idea is, I mean, first of all, the more they can see of him, the more exposure, the better. And then also, you know, why not let him take some lumps, learn some lessons before they play the Dolphins at home, you know, so that he's got even a better chance to win that game and win some of these other games that are coming up. So it makes sense to me. you know, I'm sure they didn't have a number in mind before the season, but I think when you asked me, we would talk about somewhere between 3 to 5 games is kind of what we thought.
Ross, in your mind, what does Dylan Gabriel have to do in order for this entire thing to be deemed a success?
What do you mean this entire thing?
Like deciding to bench Joe Flacco for Dylan Gabriel just 5 games into the season.
I don't know. Just show any type of promise. My sense was that you guys are on the air every day. I'm not. But my sense was that most Browns fans were ready for this sooner rather than later. Am I wrong on that?
I think so. That is fair, yeah.
That was my guess. And so I think that that's what they wanted, and they're getting what they wanted. And I think, there's two questions. One is, like, what does he have to do before they would move on to Shador? In terms of to moving on for Gabriel to be a success, I don't know, give any type of hope. Show any type of flashes that he could be the guy. I don't think they need to win a game or win a game of the next couple or whatever, but it's not like the offense was lighting up with Flacco. I mean, they probably can't be much worse with Gabriel than they were with Flacco.
Ross, are you a Dylan Gabriel believer from back in college, all 72 years of him?
I told you that story, right?
I cannot recall.
2019, midway through the season, I did a game between UCF and East Carolina. And UCF's starting quarterback in 2019 was Dylan Gabriel. And their star receiver was Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis is in his 6th year in the NFL. He's on his 3rd team. He signed a huge contract after becoming a free agent. This is Dylan Gabriel's first start. Like, that is just unbelievable. Good for him, though. I think he made a good chunk of change in college, which I'm happy for. I think he's a good fit for what Stefanski wants. You know, ball out quick, operated effectively, mobile enough for the bootlegs and stuff. You know, I think he's got a little bit of Tua to his game. I think maybe a little bit of Kirk Cousins to his game. You know, I can see some comps with both those guys. And I think he's a bright kid. He's obviously very, very experienced. And I think that will help him. Although I also think he's going to see some things that he hasn't before from Flores. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if all of you had a pick 6. I don't know if you can prop bet that or whatever, but he's going to be trying to get the ball out quickly. And the Vikings know that. So they're going to try to jump these quick passes underneath. And I would not be surprised if Isaiah Rodgers or somebody takes one back to the house.
Ross, if things don't go well,
like what you just described there, just to be clear.
That would be pretty bad. What do you make of Joe Flacco remaining the backup quarterback and not Shador Sanders? Because that's been the buzz here today.
Yeah, well, you know how during preseason and training camp, there was a lot of nonsense about, you know, the Browns were like setting Shador up to fail and putting him in a bad spot and all those things. So that was obviously nonsense and nonsensical. Making him the backup this week, or maybe even any week, but certainly this week, now that would be setting him up to fail. Because what people don't understand is all of the reps this week will go to Dylan Gabriel because he's the starter. And he needs them, and they want him to get those looks before the game. So the job of the backup in the NFL, which a lot of people don't understand, is to be able to function competently with no reps during the week, maybe 1 or 2 on Friday. So Flacco obviously just started the last 4 games, so he can do that. If they had Shador as the backup and Gabriel gets hurt the third play, it would be so bad that it would be comical. And so I think they're doing the right thing. Do I think at some point they'll probably throw Shador out there? Yeah, I do. But it will be at the start of a week where he gets all the reps as the number one. I don't think it makes sense to have him as the number two, because then if he got in the game, it would be ugly, ugly. I mean, it's probably going to be ugly whenever he gets in anyway, but then it would be like potentially comically bad, especially based on everything you know, see and hear about Shador.
Ross, did you see the video of Shador earlier today and Berea being asked about Dylan Gabriel named as the starter?
Where he moved his mouth but didn't say anything?
Yeah, that would be the one. I was just wondering if you had an opinion, because many people on the internet are big mad or big defensive about this.
Honestly, I'm at the point where I don't even know what to say with some of these guys and some of the things they do. I guess I'm neither. I wouldn't say I'm big mad. I really don't care. And I'm not big defensive either. But that is, you just described anything involving Shador Sanders in a nutshell. There is absolutely no middle ground. Anytime you post anything about Shador Sanders, I don't know if these are real people or if like someone has pre-programmed bots to come out on either side of any Shador Sanders issue ever. Nobody ever has a reason to take. It's always like, he's the best, he should be starting, blah, 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 or he's the worst, he's terrible. It's neither. He's a pretty good quarterback who, you know, obviously was not the prospect that people thought he was. Probably got drafted a little bit lower than he should have. Probably should have been like a second or third round pick. He's a developmental guy. He's got a long way to go, but nobody wants to hear that. But like doing stuff like this, I don't see how that helps him. I don't understand that.
Ross, despite all of this quarterback stuff, it kind of seems like week five, winnable game for the Browns in London. Minnesota's a little bit beat up. We're not 100% sure if it's going to be Wentz. They're hopeful J.J. McCarthy could practice at some point this week. Despite everything going into this game, this kind of feels like maybe a winnable game for the Browns.
It is a winnable game for the Browns. I mean, because of their defense, I feel like almost every game is a winnable game for the Browns. That's how I've thought about it. And this certainly, with how beat up the Vikings are and how they looked, I mean, they're not favored, the Browns. They shouldn't be. I don't think they'll win, but they could. You know, I mean, I think the Dylan Gabriel aspect of it's fascinating because we really don't – I mean, I think I know what to expect. But it's a lot of bootlegs to the left, but I think the Vikings will be ready for that. So you have to expect that the edge guy to that side, anytime Dylan Gabriel boots to the left, is going to go right at him and try to light him up. He's going to get the ball out super quick because they're going to be paranoid about Flores blitz packages. And that's going to work a bunch of times, and I think probably not work a few times. I don't know the numbers this year, guys, but I talked about this with Greg Cosell last year on the Ross Tucker podcast. Flores blitzes six or more guys more than any team in the league. And he also drops eight in coverage and only rushes three more than any other team in the league. So most teams rush four, and if they blitz, they add one guy. Flores is either coming with six or seven guys, or he's dropping eight. He's like all or nothing, and I think it throws off quarterbacks a lot. Because they don't, you know, it looks different depending on which one they're doing, and they change it up. And that's probably especially the case with a rookie quarterback in his first start.
Ross, is the AFC North, rather, really as bad as it looks right now?
No, I don't think so. I think the Ravens will be okay as soon as Lamar Jackson gets back to being healthy. okay is not the same as saying they're going to the Super Bowl or a Super Bowl favorite. My guess is if he's only out a couple weeks, that it ends up being Ravens, Steelers, both somewhere between 9 and 11 wins, you know, battling it out for AFC North supremacy at the end of the year.
Ross, great stuff as always, buddy. We got a playoff game to get to in the very near future here. Otherwise, we'll keep you a little bit longer. But appreciate you and can't wait to talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. No, enjoy the playoff game. Later, dude.
Later, dude. That is Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side.
Oh, you couldn't hear it from the audio. We're a radio show, not a TV show, although we are on YouTube. So technically, we're going to have to get to the point where we have to be playing these videos.
We can recreate it. Yes.
Yes. We're recreating what Shedeur Sanders was doing yesterday. In the locker room, major, major credit to intrepid young reporter for 92.3 The Fan. And he's all over the place because, ladies and gentlemen, Spencer German, he is Spencito on social media, always does a terrific job. You can hear him on the weekend. He's on Locked On Browns, Cleveland Browns, Sports Illustrated. He covers it all. And Spence, I think you drew the ire of my co-host today.
Don't do that.
Jason Lloyd of The Athletic.
Spencer, you did not draw the ire. No,
don't
of
walk
me.
It back. Don't
I'm not.
Even start walking it
I'm
back.
I'm not.
Play the audio. No, we got to do it. Because I'm not going to let you get away with this. Oh, we all heard
yeah.
it.
Okay, good. Yeah, play the audio.
And by the
play
way, it. Awful Announcing wants to do something on this. Now, go ahead. Here is Jason Lloyd, my co-host today, and for Ken Carmen earlier in the show.
Stop putting cameras and microphones in the face of the third string quarterback. He was never going to be the backup. Anyone who pays any attention to this team, who knows how they think, who knows how they're operating, he was never going to be the backup. Stop talking to the third string quarterback. And if you're the Browns, stop letting him in the locker room during media availability. There are places all over that building to hide. You tell him, go sit in the hot tub for 45 minutes.
Spence, I will tell you, your boss backed you up today because he called in to say, yeah, Spence is doing exactly what I wanted him to do. What is your video up to now? Almost 14 million. You did the right thing. Don't let these old curmudgeons tell you otherwise. Your video is all over ESPN. It's on Fox all morning long.
Well, listen, I think there's a fair point in what Jason's saying in that, like, yes, I understand why people are frustrated and annoyed that a third string quarterback is getting cameras shoved in his face and getting asked questions. But I think the thing that Keith said that I think probably sort of sums this up the most is just like the idea that the Browns kind of did this themselves, right? Like they don't have a franchise quarterback, and they drafted two of them in this past year's draft. And so as long as those two guys exist together on this roster and they're going to be compared to each other, and we're going to wonder like how far along is one versus the other. And, you know, I think Shedeur also isn't your typical fifth round pick or your typical third string quarterback. I think that can be that's very accurate given, you know, just how polarizing of a figure that he is. I think all those things kind of add up to why, you know, yesterday I felt like it did make sense to try to talk to Shedeur on some level because, listen, like the other rookie that was drafted with you is getting a starting job. How do you feel about it? But listen, I get it. Like, I think fans of this team are sort of annoyed that he keeps making headlines for maybe the wrong reasons. And I'm sure there's other teams looking around like, well, this wouldn't happen on our team because nobody cares about the third string quarterback. So I get where Jason's coming from. I felt in the moment yesterday it was a story that people probably wanted to hear or see is what how Shedeur feels about it. And apparently he didn't really want to tell us.
There's plenty of. I don't know if blame is the right word. There's plenty to go around that made the situation what it is. And I just think the media has the most culpable role being, listen, I know I'm in the media. I've been doing this 25 years. I think the media is most culpable, but everybody has a role in this. And if Shedeur comes out and says, I'm doing everything I can to prepare myself, I'm confident. And if I'm called upon, I'll be ready to play. And that's all he says. Then a lot of this goes away, but he's not wired that way. That's not who he is. And so he'd rather come out. And I thought Rex was over the line and unfair in some of the things that he said. I think I know where Rex was going with that and what Rex Ryan was trying to say. I thought it was overly harsh and unnecessary. which led to then yesterday. But there, I mean, no starting quarterback in the NFL acts the way like Shador did yesterday with the miming and with the not really like either talk or don't talk. I know he's going to get criticized no matter what he does. Part of that is this: when you become a social media figure and you become to the level that he is, that's what comes with it. Some people are going to like you and some people aren't. Some people are going to offend you and some people aren't. I just think everybody has a role to play. And in the Browns' role, this is why 31 teams passed on him five times, because everybody saw this coming. We said it at the draft. There's going to come a point where everyone's going to Shador and saying, you're not playing. How do you feel about not playing? Well, here it's September and it's happened already. Yeah. So this is why 31 other teams said, nope, not interested in that, not dealing with that with a backup quarterback.
Well, and James, I agree with you on Rex. By the way, I covered Rex for a couple of years in Buffalo, and he as much as Shador plays the game, like Rex knows what he's doing. Like I was in a back then they used to do like the conference calls with the opposing coach, and it was the year that Tom Brady was suspended for the first four games of the season, and Rex Ryan came out and pretended to be a beat reporter and try to ask Julian Edelman if he was starting a quarterback that week because Tom Brady was going to be out. Like Rex Ryan knows how to play the game too, so yeah. I do think he sort of delivered his comments in a way that were a little more inflammatory than they needed to be. But to your other point though, Jason, like with the other teams passing on him and understanding like this is kind of what comes with the territory. I also think too, like I know for a fact that, you know, that the Browns don't want to tell Shador like, hey, don't talk, right? Because they think from their perspective, and I get it, that looks like you're sort of silencing him and not letting him speak, and you know that's not a good look either. So that certainly wasn't the case yesterday. This was all just Shador acting alone, which I think is the bigger thing here, right? Like, I honestly think, you know, you bring up maybe tell him to go hang out in the hot tub. Do we even know for sure that Shador would, like, just take that advice?
Probably
like,
not.
I don't know. I think he kind of operates on his own platform because he knows he's polarizing. He knows who he is. He knows that he's this larger-than-life figure. So I kind of think, like, yeah, people can give him all sorts of advice and tell him not to do things. But I think in a lot of ways, like he kind of acts on his own because he feels like he knows how to handle those things. And so I guess that's up to him. And I think that's kind of what played out yesterday as well. But yeah, it's such an interesting situation for sure.
At some point it becomes a matter of, is the juice worth the squeeze? And if he's a fifth round pick and you don't think he's ready and you don't think he's close, then why are you keeping him around?
Yeah, that's very fair. I think I saw a lot of that in my comments the last few hours, 24 hours, whatever it's been, with people just being like, you know, same thing you said, this is why he was drafted in the fifth round. You know, this is maybe they should cut him now or whatever. He's just a distraction. So I think there's certainly a lot of fans that feel that way. I would imagine this is probably, it's probably going to be a while till we talk to Shador again, want to hear from Shador again, because
oh, no.
I'm assuming they want to ride with Dylan for a while, but maybe not. I don't know.
All it takes is one. And post game, it's hard because they're all in there post game. Yeah. You know, it's then he is available after games in the locker room, both home and away. But during the week, there's plenty of places for guys to.
So, Spence, you're saying it's going to be a while, but next open locker room session that you're in, are you going back up? Are you going to listen to this old man trying to dictate how you do your job?
Here we go.
New blood.
No, listen, I thought yesterday there was a purpose to talking to Shador. Like I said, he was the other quarterback drafted in this class. We know he's a polarizing figure. He believes he's good enough to play now. So getting his perspective on the change and him remaining the third quarterback, I thought was valuable. I guess if there's maybe if Dylan Gabriel gets hurt on Sunday and then now he does get promoted to quarterback, the second quarterback, that would maybe perpetuate. So I guess I'm wrong. Maybe there is a world where we talk to him again really soon. But I don't have any plans to go up to him in the near future to ask him questions along those lines. You know, maybe if I have like a private conversation with him, that's one thing. But I took no offense to what you said, Jason. I get it. And I understand that perspective as well. I felt yesterday I was trying to do what my job entails, if that makes sense.
When there's 30 people around, I get why it becomes, what's the word? Everyone's going to do it then. Once there's three
it's
or
infectious.
Four,
it's yeah.
Then because now you don't want to be the one where your boss is yelling at you saying, why don't you have this when everybody else has it? I totally get it. I don't fault you at all. Lima's totally being Lima right now. I don't put all of this on you at all. He's the one that dragged your name into this to begin with. But yeah, listen, I've done this a really long time. I totally get how the game is played. I'm just over it. I'm just tired of it.
I want to ask Spence, how did it end? Once that left and you guys are all looking at each other going, I can't believe this just transpired, because you have a good eye for this. You know this is going to play. Was Shador kind of laughing as he walked away? Did PR step in? Like, what happened?
No, there was no like stepping in. It was kind of just like, all right, well, we're not getting anything out of this, so we'll let it be. And then, you know, as we kind of sort of walking away, I sort of asked Shador just, you know, off the record, like, hey, have you ever been to London? And he was like talking about how he had been, whatever. So, you know, it was nothing. He was definitely laughing about it. He just kind of had fun with it. But I think that's kind of the bit with him, right? Like, we saw his brother's media company that he runs posted the clips and, you know, sort of put it, spliced it together with the Rex Ryan comments, which gave us the indication that it was in response to Rex Ryan. So I think he planned this on his own. I think he knew what he was doing. It was to make a statement, because people are saying he runs his mouth too much. And so he was basically trying to tell everybody, I'm not going to run my mouth. But I think he definitely, you know, he walked away from it laughing and understanding that it was kind of all in good fun from his perspective. But clearly on social media, which, surprise, surprise, people are going to overreact on social media. A lot of people didn't take it that way. So it is what it is, I guess.
At Spencito _ I think is what it is on social media. Great job yesterday. Do everything you can to do more of these moments, because it gives us a lot of runway. We're enjoying it. Thank you, Spence.
No problem, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
See you, buddy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Undefeated number one Ohio State, a night game. Oh my goodness, a night game for Ohio State. And no one knows more about the Buckeyes than our super friend Tim May from the Tim May Podcast and all other forms of media. Yes. Hi, Tim.
What's going on, man? I tell you what, that music, whatever that was not Eastbound and Down. That's for darn sure.
Oh, man, yeah, you heard the word, man.
We've had a change.
We got crushed.
Yep.
Our friends on the video Minnesota stream.
We're trying to get hip to the YouTube, so we got to move some stuff around.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Minnesota is Southbound and Down, but you know, that's it's pure relatively speaking.
Most things outside of Canada and Alaska are south.
I don't know if you asked me a question, except things are going great for me at this very moment. At this moment.
How come things are going great for Tim May?
Is it because
is the Tim May moment?
How you shooting?
I'm not playing golf today. I'm playing golf Sunday, but I have a new driver. I don't know if I told you that, right? And I'm not talking about like driving Miss Daisy. Yeah, I have a new driver.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I thought you said.
In my bag. And by the way, that's one of Gene Hackman's great lines, the late great Gene Hackman, mm-hmm. in Get Shorty.
Yeah.
Where he says, this is going to be my driving Miss Daisy. he was a B movie producer in Hollywood film, and this is going to be my driving Miss Daisy. That's one of the great lines ever. but driving Miss Daisy was a hell of a movie. But I mean, you know, you wonder what other producers aspire to. Now you know. But it's just going good. My new Q35i driver, which I got for free. I won't go into that. But
wow,
man, does it make a difference in a 71 year old man's life? That is for sure.
That you got a free driver? Somebody gave it to you, or you won it, or?
Well, the guy that owns FanStreamSports.com. It's based out of Dallas, but that's where my podcast is now. On the Tim May Show featuring Clay Hall.
Yes.
And he just showed up and with this driver and said, "Here, Tim." And I said, "Thank you, sir. May I have another?" No, that was Kevin Bacon's line.
It's still not better than your Solheim Cup gift of a putter. that had the logo embossed in it. Did you get one of those?
No, I did not get one of those. And I'm not sure I would.
You covered it.
I'm not sure I would approach it one way or the other. I have a nice tailor-made putter that I really like. Now, if I could just learn how to putt, I'd almost have it. I'd almost have like my driver and my putter. If I could get those two things straightened out, now if I could just figure out how to hit approach shots, I'd have it going, baby.
We'll get there. We'll get you there.
I'm almost there, too. I'm playing tomorrow for the first time in like 7 or 8 years. I'm playing tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Yeah. Where are you playing? Anything? Any place good?
It used to be the home of the Cleveland Open, Highland. I'm supposed to play there tomorrow morning.
Oh, okay. Well, good for you, man.
I'm excited. Good luck. It's been a while. It's a charity event.
Well, speaking of learning how to putt.
We wasted too much time.
Speaking of learning how to putt, what did we learn from the big win in Washington?
I thought you were talking about what we learned from the Ryder Cup.
No. Tim, I only got 15, buddy. We don't have an hour. I could yell and scream for an hour.
The U.S. team forgot the one important part about the Ryder Cup, which is the cup. Get the ball in the cup.
Oh.
God, no one could hit a putt to save their souls.
I came up with that. That's pretty good, though. You can talk about Keegan Bradley and everything else, but gosh, the teaming of the teammates the first 2 days was just unbelievably bad for the United States and good for Europe. But I digress. What you learned is that this team faced some adversity on the road in the sense of drove right down the field on his first possession, but on fourth and goal couldn't stuff the ball in there. One of the main reasons because they ran the exact same play they ran against Texas for their first touchdown of the season. And lo and behold, Washington had watched the tape and just ganged up on C.J. Donaldson. But the bottom line is past that made the first half a struggle. I'm sure y'all watched it. And then, but the defense just more and more got a stranglehold on that offense. And, you know, that offense had only punted twice. I'm talking about Washington's going into the game. They punted twice in the first quarter, you know, I think, or maybe – yeah, I think it was twice. But the bottom line was, because Ohio State fumbled a good punt return. Brandon Ennis lost the ball. So that the first half had a lot of errors in it, but Ohio State overcame. And really, 24-6 is pretty dominant win on the road in your Big Ten opener. And you know, it's always good when push comes to shove to throw the ball to number four and let him do his thing. So a lot of things were learned. But defensively, this defense just keeps getting better and better. I mean, like I said, that was a Washington offense that was feeling pretty good about itself going into that game and was number one, I think, in the nation in third downs converted, et cetera. I think they were one of 11 or 13 on third downs. So this defense is only going to get better, too. And so there's a lot of things that were learned there.
Yeah, they've only given up two touchdowns in four games. Two.
Right, right. Well, you can always shut people out.
But, oh, that's true. Grambling found that out.
To do. Once you get up, you want to play some of your backups. The good news about a road game is there aren't very many backups.
True.
You know, there are only 74 guys on the trip, so you pretty much stick with what you got. But yeah, I mean, you learned a lot about it. You learned a lot about a team when it. You know, Ohio State, if you remember correctly, opened like as a 10 or 11 point favorite, and by kickoff, I think it was only 7.5. And they still won by 24 minus 6 is 18. They still won by 18. Hey, see how good I am at math?
You are good.
Good on you.
Are we living in Bo Jackson's world now? Is that where we're at? I know I ask you this every week, and, you know.
Well, y'all are living in his sphere of influence up there.
Well,
we're
pushing it. We're pushing it. You know why? Because I loved watching him play in high school. I loved watching him run track. The last time I remember watching an athlete like that dominate in high school, and I know LeBron, we could say that, but it reminded me, and it'll hit home with you, was covering Andy Katzenmoyer in high school. Like, Andy just dominated when he was out there. I mean, like, it was whether he was playing fullback or he was playing linebacker, and that's what Bo Jackson looked like when we were watching him in high school. Same thing.
Right. So there you go. What's your next question? No, I'm just messing with you. What's your next question and answer? Here's the thing, fellas. I keep reminding people. I mean, and you know, and I'm not just parroting P-A-R-R-O-T-I-N-G, Ryan Day. I'm not just parroting him. This is a lot in their mind. They're playing a 16-game season again this year. You gotta have that pair in a spare. You gotta have three guys going. And
And, you know, the having the two guys go in last year was huge for them, the two running backs. And so, yeah, I mean, if, you know, anybody paying attention saw that Bo Jackson was the second running back off the bench, was the second running back into the game, excuse me, last week. And they ran that little stupid trick play, which I'm not sure, quite sure what that design was supposed to do. But the bottom line was he was the number two back in that game in a pecking order sense. And, you know, I don't think anybody has a problem, you know, whether he starts the game or not. A lot of times that's based on circumstance and situation. But the bottom line is he's going to play a lot that's already been established, barring injury. So that answers your question best as I can. And he's been the leading rusher the last 3 weeks, last three games. So that backs up or gives you evidence of why he is going to play a lot more as it goes on. But, you know, there's the days of a guy carrying the ball 30 times are over, unless, you know, you never say never, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've got Archie Griffin coming on my podcast this afternoon. We're going to talk about some of those kind of things. And plus the reunion of the 75 team, which almost did it, but not quite. But go ahead. Go ahead, caller.
Yes. The Dan, legend. Dan on line one. Go, Dan.
The legend, Tim May, joining us on the hotline here. Of course, you can hear him on the Tim May podcast with Clay Holmes. And Archie Griffith coming up, which is just outstanding. Something weird has happened this season for the Buckeyes as well, in that you look to the sidelines and Matt Patricia is smiling, which is something I have never seen in my entire life of watching Matt Patricia do anything. What has been the most impressive part of this defense?
Tim, he looks happier now than I've ever seen him.
I have never seen that guy look that happy.
Especially after the Texas game.
You know why?
Why?
Guys, I don't mean to get... let me whisper it. I don't want everybody to know this answer.
Don't tell anybody.
Except for the millions listening to you guys. And even in Canada. Did y'all signal reach Canada?
Of course we do.
Does, doesn't it?
You only got to swim like 15 miles out here in Canada.
Yeah, they're in the middle of Lake Erie,
there's
right?
There's somebody on a boat listening to us right now.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And bobbing up and down and probably getting seasick like I did. But anyway, or lake sick. Excuse
it's
me.
These new cruise ships that are going through Lake Erie, through the Great Lakes.
No, I like it. But anyway, wait, what was the question again?
Matt Patricia, happy?
Yeah, Matt Patricia.
Yes.
Imagine you're... I don't know. I didn't really like a lot of Picasso stuff, but I'll just say Picasso. Imagine you're Picasso, and all through your career, you've got all these plans, and you start implementing them. But now, and you start putting them on canvas. But now, all of a sudden, you've got almost limitless paint. Mm. That's what he's in, limitless canvas. He's got guys that are really bought into what he's selling. Number one. Number two, they're super talented. I used this example a couple of weeks ago with you guys. The first play by Ohio State defensively against Texas and the way Ohio State lined up, and then the first play by North Carolina and how it lined up against TCU was almost a spitting image, okay? But as one game ensued, Ohio State got a firmer grip on things, and North Carolina did not. And the main reason is because of their paint. I mean – Ohio State has quality A-plus paint in Caleb Downs and now Caden Curry coming on like a freight train. Just everybody on that defense is just stepping up from one week to the next. The linebackers, Arvell Reese from up in your territory. Arvell Reese, I mean, this is a guy hardly anybody paid attention to a year ago. Now he may be the prototype everybody's looking for in the coming 2026 draft, because Matt Patricia has found ways to get him extremely involved and to play sick'em football. And when you play sick'em football with guys who are taking also care of their responsibilities, you got something going on. Whereas North Carolina doesn't have that array of paint, you know. And matter of fact, one of North Carolina's better players in the spring is number 14 on Ohio State right now, playing going in as a not backup. He plays a lot, Bo Atkinson at defensive end. So that's why Matt Patricia is smiling. Do they stone every play? No. Do they have a chance to knock you out? Absolutely. And that's what's going to be interesting this week, because they're going to be playing an offense that has a quarterback that doesn't run much, can't really run much, but he's more of a statue back there throwing the ball. You know, 6'4", 6'5" kid from Fayetteville, Arkansas, and so we'll see how now it changes from one week to the next. But the funny thing about college football defensive coordinator as opposed to the pros is, yeah, the pros have different players they feature from one week to the next, but the offenses are very, very similar from one week to the next, with few exceptions. College, it's different every week. And I think he's really embraced that. But yeah, this team is playing at a high level, both from a base defense way of looking at it, from being sound, but also from getting after it. And, you know, when you got guys like Caleb Downs and Arvell Reese and Sonny Styles running around in the middle of that defense doing all kinds of, like, mean things to the quarterback's mind, you got something going on.
All right, Tim, I got two questions, and we only got, like, 4 or 5 minutes here, so I got to make sure I get everything in. Ready? Minnesota tomorrow, then number 22, Illinois, Wisconsin, a little bit of a break, Penn State. There's no way they're looking past this game, is there?
No, this team seems to have a maturity about it already. So, no, I don't see that. I'm just to answer that. But, you know, you don't know game time, baby.
There's always been. But, Tim, why do sometimes these night games against every once in a while, Ohio State finds himself in a Saturday night game that used to get buried like on Big Ten or I don't know. And sometimes they land. Yes. It's been a long time, but it's still.
You know why? Because NBC wants them. NBC wants them for the ratings on Saturday night. Big Ten Network wants them for the ratings on Saturday night.
That's why,
in a nutshell. I mean, you know, stranger things are coming down the road, you know, in the next 5 or 7 years for college football. I mean, it's going to be very interesting from a scheduling standpoint because, you know, if you get bigger TV contracts down the road, they're going to want quality premium games, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what's coming, but that's way down the road. That's well after my time. That's well after I'm now, then we'll be always hitting off the senior tees.
Okay, my friend. So I need your perspective on something. Well, go ahead, finish that thought, and then we'll get to the next one.
But well, the point is, you only get, you know, the as they pick games, you know, from one week to the next, and there's a pecking order of how games are picked. When you get a chance at putting Ohio State on prime time, you want to put them on there. The game last week was literally CBS's prime time game, which is 3:30 start, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the Big Ten contract with these networks, so they put them on at 3:30 Eastern time, 12:30 Pacific time. But the thing about it is, it's like I thought you were going to ask me, man, how do these guys adapt from one week to the next, starting at noon, then starting at 7:30, then starting at 3:30, then starting at noon? I mean, it's quite the exercise.
So how do they do it? Because we're watching the Browns this week, and this kind of leads me to the next one. Browns are at 9:30 in the morning here. It's 1 o'clock there, though. I don't know. So they're looking at it. And beyond that, I don't care about the time. My question for you is, what did you learn about Dylan Gabriel by watching him twice last year against Ohio State? Because he's got his first start since Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio State obviously contained him the second time around, much like they contained Damon Williams last week. I mean, they put a cage around him. That's the word of the last 2 weeks is cage. As soon as Caleb Downs said it, I went, that's exactly what you got to do with this guy. Meaning you don't let him escape to where he wants to escape. You make him escape where there are people to tackle him once he escapes, or at least, you know, blow dart him. But the bottom line is Dylan Gabriel was quite creative as a college football player. What he left college football is what, the number one or number two all-time passing leader? Are you kidding me?
3,913 yards.
Well, that was last year.
Last year,
right?
Last year, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about for his career. But look how many guys have played quarterback in college football. And I know when you list a guy at 5'11", he's probably 5'10", right? But yeah. I don't even know what the Browns list him. But the guy's a playmaker.
7'2". He's listed as 7'2" this week. It's weird.
There you go. Yeah. The next Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's right. Yes.
But anyway, bottom line is he plays big. And he really does. And, you know, as long as you can, you know, I would attack him. I would come up the middle. I mean, just basically big guys coming up the middle on him and make him, you know, flush him out and stuff. But he's really good on the move, too. So I think, you know, he'll make some mistakes. He'll make some big mistakes. But it can't be any worse than the last several weeks. I'm telling you, a quarterback for the Browns cannot be any worse.
There you have it from a man who watched him twice last year. All right, last question for you. Is Franklin County still complaining about the fact that this game isn't at noon? Because everybody wanted it at noon, didn't they?
They did. I thought everybody wants these games at 7:30.
I'm kidding.
That was a big gripe. I mean, you know, it's like I liked having that Texas game at noon, man. Show up, put up, shut up, and go home. And that's what it was all about. So
yeah, that's because you're working, I'm working. Everybody else wants to sit outside right. their car and have fun
and
yeah.
do whatever they do. But they can get up at 5:30 in the morning like you and I do, and you know, get with it if they really want that. Or they can sit there after a game and bask in the glory of yet another major Ohio State victory. Yes. Instead, now half you know with these 7:30 starts, you wonder how many people even remember being at the game.
Or how much they spent. Tim, we got to roll. Let's do it again next Friday. Appreciate you.
You're the legend. Talk soon.
Boys, always enjoy it. You know that.
Talk to you later. Thanks, Tim.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Got a new quarterback in town, Dylan Gabriel, starting this Sunday against Minnesota. When asked for some sort of commentary on that, Shador did his best Marcel Marceau bit there. That's a famous mime, by the way. I realize now that it's the only mime that I knew of, and there was no other mime that people alive today might actually even damn know.
That's a good poll.
It's only really a good poll if people damn get it. Now, that being said, to talk about Mimegate, to talk about all the many things we've talked about with Dylan Gabriel today, we head out to the fan hotline and welcome in of Cleveland.com, the always incredible Ashley Bastock. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I did not have you dropping the name of a famous mime on my bingo card for today.
And yet, it was the least problematic way that I've introduced you in the last 6 weeks. So I think we're really building a bridge to Trust Town right now.
We are. You know what? I love this for us.
You know what? This is so us. Everybody says that. It's so Ashley Bastock when she joins Afternoon Drive. So I will ask you, what did you think of Mime Sanders earlier today?
Well, it's the first time I've seen anything like that, to be quite honest. I only in person caught the tail end of it, right? Because I kind of realized, I was like, oh, Shador's over there. And the way the locker room is set up, I was in the exact opposite corner of the locker room. So by the time I moseyed on over, it was wrapping up because, as we all saw from the video, nothing was actually being said. So I think, first of all, this is going to be something that gets blown up because it is Shador Sanders. And that's what happens when I think Shador does anything. And this is a prime example of, for the second straight week, Shador Sanders is still making headlines, even though he is not the starting quarterback of the football team. So pretty sure that is going to be the case yet again with everything we are seeing so far today and this afternoon and all the aggregation that is going on of this one moment.
Ashley, well, he's not the backup quarterback either, and we'll ask you about that in a second. But first, want to ask about the decision ultimately that was the Cleveland Browns deciding to go with Dylan Gabriel instead of Joe Flacco. It felt like the handwriting was on the wall for that decision to come down really ever since Sunday afternoon. What'd you make of the decision now that it's finally public and out there?
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think the writing was on the wall. I was fairly certain after Sunday that we were trending in this direction. And then the way Kevin Stefanski talked on Monday, kind of solidified my opinion further. And then by Tuesday, you know, we recorded a whole podcast essentially telling listeners, hey, we're going with and assuming that this is going to happen. We're going to talk about it like it's going to happen. If it doesn't happen, we'll let you know. But I think it became very obvious when Kevin Stefanski wouldn't give a hard yes in terms of committing to Joe Flacco. It reminded me very much of how he talked about Jameis Winston last year when it became clear they were going to bench him. And as far as the decision itself, I'm for it at this point. You know, Dylan's had 4 weeks in that backup role, and this offense has been so stagnant. And I don't think that's all Joe Flacco's fault. I think the first few games, they obviously couldn't get any kind of run game going. They've obviously had issues on their offensive line, particularly at tackle. So those things are not directly the fault of Joe Flacco, obviously, but I do think when teams are in this situation, you need to make some change. And the quickest way to possibly manufacture a spark is to get somebody else in there running the offense. Get a different quarterback in there and see how he can do. And yeah, Joe Flacco has more experience than Dylan Gabriel. I still think it was the right move for them to go with him at the beginning of the season. But Dylan has been praised for his processing and how well he does that. And I think at some point with a guy like that, you got to see it to see if it's legit. And on top of it, Dylan Gabriel is more mobile than 40-year-old Joe Flacco, who looks like he has obviously lost a significant step since 2023. So I think it makes sense for them to do this right now, and I think I like them doing it more this week as opposed to this idea of if they had drawn Joe Flacco's tenure as starter out another week and made Dylan Gabriel's first start on the road against the Pittsburgh Steelers with the Steelers coming off a bye. So I think this was a good week to get him in there.
Ashley Bastock, Cleveland.com on the fan hotline here with Nick Wilson and Nick Padone talking about Dylan Gabriel as the new Brown starting quarterback. If I had told you, let's say a week to go in the season, all right, it's going to be Dylan's job after the first 4 weeks, what would you have thought about how the first amount of time would go and what maybe you would owe him getting the job this early to?
I would think that it would mean things were not going well, either in the sense that the offense was not functioning, which was the case, or like Joe Flacco got hurt. Those would be the reasons I would have assumed that the turn would happen this quickly. So I think we'll never exactly know what the Browns' ideal timeline with him may have been, but I think we're there now, and my first guess would just be like, oh, things probably aren't going too good if you're making a switch at week four, because if you're 3-1 or something, then why would you make that switch unnecessarily? Like, I would think if it's a winning team, you're sticking with Joe as long as you can. I have always said ultimately what I thought would lose Joe Flacco this job is turning the football over. And it's what we saw. And I think, unfortunately, you know, with Joe, the best part of his game is sometimes he does make those big plays as a gunslinger, but I really felt like things were dialed back for him. So because of that, the Browns weren't even getting the best parts of Joe Flacco. Like, you're kind of left with the shell of Joe Flacco in a lot of ways, and the immobility becomes highlighted, and he can't take shots down the field the way he wants to, and guys aren't getting open, and he's turning the ball over. Like, I would have assumed it would be a disaster if you told me that, and it has not been great so far.
Ashley, do you have any concerns about the environment that they're putting Dylan Gabriel in, the fact that this game is overseas against a Brian Flores defense and the Browns offensive line has been as bad as it's looked and the receivers seem so inconsistent? Are you worried at all that he could be getting put into a bad spot here?
I mean, I think that's a fair concern. I actually think the fact that it's overseas, like it's sort of like a neutral site game. So it's not the ideal environment of a home game, but it's also, again, not the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road after a bye. So I think it could be worse. Look, I think Brian Flores is one of the best D coordinators in the game, but every week you're going to have a really good D coordinator for the most part on the other side that is going to be game planning for you. So I don't think there's much you can control in that regard. You know, I think the Vikings have a lot of their own issues. They're obviously banged up. Their offensive line might be in worse shape than the Browns right now in terms of injuries. And I think the tackle situation leaves something to be desired. Hopefully Jack Conklin can play this week. And keep in mind, if Jack Conklin plays, because Dylan Gabriel is a lefty, that right tackle spot is really like your left tackle now. He's protecting his blind side. So that will be a huge deal. Cam Robinson, the new guy they traded for from Houston, he was on the field today. So curious to see if they'll have him ready. That gives them another option. And yeah, I mean, as far as the connection with the pass catchers, like that's going to be something that we're going to have to see and see in action to know where it's at. But yeah, certainly I think when you look at the environment, it didn't do Joe Flacco any favors, but where I think Dylan can mitigate some of that, and especially the tackle problems, are with his mobility. He's going to naturally be able to get away from pressure, I think, a bit easier than Joe was.
Ashley Bastock, Cleveland.com, and the fan hotline here. Do you think that Dylan Gabriel has a longer leash from the Browns than Joe Flacco did through the first 4 weeks?
That's an interesting question, and now that you phrase it like that, like my gut says yes, because Dylan is a rookie, right? Like Joe Flacco was coming in with the intention of him winning some football games for them, keeping them in it, not turning the ball over. And, you know, we talked about some of the Joe Flacco picks he threw early. I even remember having this discussion with my colleague Dan Lobby. Like some of those, if it's a Dylan Gabriel pick, it's like, okay, he's learning. He's learning how to read NFL coverages, and you chalk it up as that sort of teaching moment, and you move on. With Joe Flacco, it becomes like, hey, this is a guy who is prone to turning the football over and prone to throwing interceptions, and he just threw another one. Like, that part of Joe Flacco's game is not changing at this point in his career. But I do think in that way, Dylan will have a bit longer of a leash, and I think that it makes sense when you're dealing with a rookie quarterback who is going to be making his first career start.
Well, I hate to ask this, but it feels like it needs asked because we've all been around this team and we've all been around how many quarterbacks this team tends to go through.
Real quick, Ashley, I'm watching him now. He doesn't seem like he hates asking.
Well,
this.
Like what happens?
Just wanted that for posterity.
What happens? Is he smiling?
No, I'm not.
He's twiddling his fingers. Little. He's got a mustache out of nowhere that he's also twirling.
A cat came and sat in his lap. Yep. And he's petting it very slowly.
Oh my goodness. What happens if this doesn't go well?
Well, I think there's a few options with this. I think this is actually a good question, Nick. I think this is something I've been asked quite a bit already over the last 3 days. And I think the answer is an interesting one and maybe not what fans expect. I think it's up in the air, first of all. I think they have options. I think, in theory, if the Browns ever want to go back to Joe Flacco, they can decide to do that. Joe Flacco is a pro's pro. Obviously, at the tail end of his career, he knew what he was getting into by coming here. And it's not like now that he's been benched that Joe Flacco was going to ask to be traded or something. They can keep Joe Flacco in their back pocket and go with him if they want. The other thing with Shedeur Sanders, because obviously I think people are making a lot out of this idea that he wasn't named the backup. I think the interesting thing about that is just because he's not the backup doesn't mean that the Browns couldn't decide, hey, we're going to start Shedeur next week, right? Like when a guy's a backup, you're a play away, you're getting thrown, you have that possibility of getting thrown into a very chaotic, very unexpected situation. So if the Browns want to keep that job for Joe Flacco, the vet right now, that makes sense. If they would decide they saw enough of Dylan, they want to see Shedeur. If Dylan Gabriel gets hurt, you can still turn around and say, oh, we would like to now see Shedeur Sanders. Like that is still very much an option for them. But the other two guys in the mix for all of this is the fact that Bailey Zappe is still on this practice squad. So if something would happen with Dylan and they wouldn't want to go back to Joe, Bailey Zappe would still be an option for them. And somebody gave me a hard time for saying that yesterday. And I'm like, look, that's just the reality of the situation. Like, are we forgetting that Bailey Zappe started a football game for this team last year, not even 12 months ago? Like, we've seen this before. He is another veteran who has started enough games to operationally, procedurally know all of this. And finally, the last guy in that room is still Deshaun Watson. And the joke is with the Cleveland Browns, you can never say never, right? That's kind of my perennial line about them with everything. So Deshaun Watson is now eligible to have his practice window open. We know that's not happening this week, that that hasn't happened. But he is still on this football team. So there are multiple options for them. I think there are multiple directions they could go. If they've seen enough of Dylan, want to give Shador a shot, if there's an injury, they have multiple paths they can take. There's multiple forks in the road. So it's kind of unknowable for me as a reporter, being totally transparent. Like, we don't know the next step they will take because they have set themselves up to have multiple options. And the state of this team this year, the state of this offense, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
Ashley, we've only got about 30 seconds here. Your best guess, do you think Cam Robinson, the Browns' new offensive tackle by way of the Texans, do you think he gets out there this weekend as one of the starting tackles?
My best guess would be yes, because we did see him at practice today. And typically a Wednesday practice, that's a good sign a guy's going to be ready to play. He's a vet. I think they're going to be able to get him up to speed. So if I had to say here at 3:30 on a Wednesday, I would lean towards yes, I think he's going to play.
That's basically a legal contract. Send it to legal. Ashley, great stuff as always. We appreciate you. And this time next week, we'll see if the Browns are 1-4 or 2-3.
We'll see. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. Ashley Bastock there on the Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.